You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and here we are on another Thursday, a free agency Thursday here at Locked On Ravens. But instead of the free agency aspect of this today, we're going to get into something a little bit different, and that's going to be some trades, some trade candidates that could come Baltimore's way, and a few that have already been discussed. And a hot topic for the Ravens is Stephon Diggs, so we're going to go with him for one of our segments, and we'll do offense in the second segment, and then defense in the third segment, because there's always the possibility that the Ravens will trade maybe some draft capital, maybe a player who doesn't fit in their system, to acquire somebody who might fit their system a bit better and could contribute in a big way for them. So we'll talk about offense in the second segment, defense in the third segment. But in the first segment, there was a big piece of NFL news that dropped yesterday pertaining to the new CBA. A lot of stuff to digest here. A huge part of this was the fact that the NFL's whole playoff structure is about to be changed, or at least under what could be the new CBA. Under the current CBA proposal that the NFL has, and we'll get into it, there are going to be discussions about whether to change the playoff format, how they would do that. They're going to be talking about adding another playoff game and taking away some preseason games and adding another regular season game as well. So it's important to talk about all that. It's a big change. So talking about all of that and understanding what implications it could have throughout the league. So we'll get into all of that in just a second. But before we do that, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Remember, anywhere there is a podcast, we are right there. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at KOstreicher34. I did a whole mini analysis of Stephon Diggs' contract and what it is, what it would mean for Baltimore if they were to actually take it on, and what it would mean if they had to give us some draft capital. So be sure to check that out. But with all that being said, let's jump right into this huge CBA rumor, this thing that's being spread around here. Adam Schefter first reported it. The NFL playoff structure is about to be seriously changed. This new CBA does go through the way it's going. There would be an extra seed added to the playoff format now. That's big, because currently, and as it has been, it's been 1 through 6. There have been 6 seeds, 12 teams in the playoffs. Now, the top 2 seeds have had byes, and 3 through 6 have had to play it out in the first round, and then all, you know the scenario. Well, in this scenario, the 7th seed would be added in, so technically a third wild card team, and then the 2 seed would no longer have a bye, so they'd only have 1 bye given out, so it would be given out to the number 1 seed. They would expand the playoff field by 2 teams. That's actually a pretty significant amount, because that's actually 44% of the entire league. If you're adding 2 more teams to the playoff field, 14 total teams, 44% of the entire league would end up getting into the playoffs. That's a pretty big number. And Jameson Hensley did a really cool thing where he looked back at the last 5 years and looked at which teams would have made the playoffs if the format was that way, the 7-seed format was that way during those 5 years. And obviously, back in 2017, the Ravens would have made it as the 7 seed. They ended up losing and missing out on the final day. We won't talk about how it still hurts a little bit, but we'll be able to just kind of see that, would that Ravens team have beaten anybody? In 2019, it would have been the Pittsburgh Steelers making it as the 7 seed, taking on the Kansas City Chiefs, and it would have been the Los Angeles Rams making it as the 7 seed, taking on the Green Bay Packers. You look at those two matchups and you say, that's annihilation, right? The Chiefs would have annihilated Pittsburgh. Who wants to see Duck Hodges or Mason Rudolph in a playoff game? Well, probably all of Steelers Nation, and then a list of maybe 2 or 3 other people, right? The Steelers defense is something different, but it's just difficult to kind of analyze and say, is this worth it? And obviously, it all goes back to the money. The owners, the player, it all goes back to the money. And so with this playoff format, the more I looked at it, the more I was like, okay, well, this could be good, this could be something, but I think it's fine the way it currently is. The 6 teams, you're not letting quote-unquote mediocre teams, not worthy teams, into the playoffs. And obviously, you know, if another team makes the playoffs, if you're adding 2 more teams to the playoffs, that's more revenue, it's more money sharing, it's more for the owners, more for the players, more football. And don't get me wrong, It would be extremely exciting to have three games on wildcard weekend on one day and then three on the other day. Six total games on wildcard weekend. And then obviously the playoff format would honestly go back to normal after that per se. Because really what it is you're having the 2 seed and the 7 seed matchup, but then you're still having the 3 and 6 seed and 4 and 5 seeds play each other. Then after that, it would obviously be the number 1 seed takes on the lowest remaining seed and the number 2 seed takes on the highest remaining seed. So assuming the 7th seed is usually always going to get out, which sure, there could be some upsets, which is really what makes this appeal appealing to me. But I think that if I'm the NFL and if I'm the players union, I'm thinking about this as, well, are we going to sacrifice the integrity, or not integrity, but are we going to sacrifice quality here for money? And right now the answer on both sides is yes. Now Richard Sherman has been an enlightening voice on this whole thing, and he's been kind of saying, well, it's not all about the money. You know, Jamal Adams tweeted out last night that he loves it because there's more money for everybody. But Richard Sherman said, you know, slow your roll, young fella, right? There's much more to it than that. And to me, this is a little bit out there for me, because not only is the playoff format proposed to be changed, but they're also considering adding in a 17th regular season game, as well as reducing the preseason. This is something that I do not like in the slightest. I don't think it's going to be good for the game. I think you're going to start to see players getting injured in week 17 over the coming years. Let's say this gets into effect next season. If players start getting injured in this week 17 game, everything is going to break loose. Every negative emotion in player, it's all going to break loose, because you're putting the players' bodies on the line for an extra season. You're not letting them get the rest that they need before the playoffs or recover for next season. It's just another area where there is a potential for a career-ending injury. We talk all the time about how football is such a dangerous sport. It's a physically demanding sport, and adding on an extra regular season game to that, I don't see how the players agree to that. Plus, not only that, but the scheduling, it would be hectic. It would be terrible. Right now, the NFL has a great schedule maker in place, a great schedule formula. You play each person in your division twice. That makes up 6 games. You play a division in the AFC and a division in the NFC. That makes up another 8 games. And then you play the other 2 division leaders from the AFC. That's 2 games. That adds up to 16. That's perfect. If you were to add in an extra game, where is the scheduling coming from? Who are you playing? I don't understand where that would come. Right now, you have a perfect formula of, okay, this mathematically makes sense in terms of everybody getting their fair competition. For the Ravens, they play the 2 division leaders in the AFC, aside from the AFC South, the Chiefs and the Patriots, because they won their division. All the first place teams play each other in the AFC. All the second place teams play each other in the AFC. Where are you getting that extra game? Who are you going to schedule? The last place team on some random AFC or NFC division? I don't know where that comes into effect. I don't see where it happens. Now, what could happen is maybe they put in another bye week, and then you still have the 16-game schedule. You're still getting revenue over the course of an 18-week season, I'd call it, but you're not putting that risk for the players out there. You're giving them more time to recover, and you're not having this whole scheduling conflict with literally every single team in the league. I think, in my opinion, that's a lot better than having to find a way to organize the whole entire schedule in a way that I've thought over, and I still can't find a way. If you found a way, please at me on Twitter, contact me, do something to, you know, help me understand this, because right now, as I've thought about it, the NFL has it great right now. If you're going to add an extra game in there, is it going to be fair? Is it going to be something that each team can say, okay, we deserve to play that team? If you're putting the Bengals up against the Patriots this season, that last place versus first place thing, that's not fair. We can all admit that's not fair. If you're having the Patriots play the Dolphins 3 times a year, that's not fair, right? I don't think that should be the case. I think the NFL has it great, has it fine right now, and I don't think they should change that. I think they have it in a way, in a place where it's okay. Now, if they added an extra bye week, again, I think that's a fair compromise. Because again, you're getting a lot of money, you're going throughout in an 18-week schedule instead of a 17-week schedule. And so I don't know how that would work with money. It might result in more revenue. I just think that it's so weird to me that the players, that this is all coming out now, because the players were so bent on not having this happen because of all the reasons I just mentioned. The whole thing was, there was a report that was saying, look, if the players were to agree to have a 17-game schedule, they would get 10 things they would want. So like a 1-for-10 exchange. Even I don't know if that's worth it. I mean, yeah, the money is here. And there's also another rumor that a part of this new deal, the players would go from the 47% share they have under the money under the current deal to a 48% share for 16 games. And then if they agreed to go to a 17 game schedule, that would increase to 48.5%. So that would be $5 billion in revenue. That's not a small amount of money. I mean, hey, that's a lot of money, but I don't know. A lot of stuff to digest there, and a lot of stuff as we kind of monitor this in the coming weeks, the coming days. The NFL wants to get this done by March. The players want to get it done by March. They want to make sure that this doesn't expire going into 2021. So it's going to be interesting to see what they can agree on and if it'll end up coming to fruition and helping both sides out. But we are going to go to break now. When we get back, we're going to be talking about the offensive trade candidates for the Ravens. And right now, there's really only one. So stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the second segment of this Locked on Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher still with you here. And we just talked about that new proposed CBA deal for the NFL and the players. But now let's get into some real football talk here, talking about the Ravens and talking about some potential trade candidates for Baltimore. And we're going to start here with the offense. Now, there are two that I've pinpointed, but one I really want to talk about. The first one, and this is in no way going to happen, there's maybe a 1% shot this actually happens, but it's Le'Veon Bell. There have been a lot of rumors that Le'Veon Bell might be on the trading block. The Jets might be wanting to get rid of him. Adam Gase is just a whole whirlwind at coach, so who knows what he's thinking, but Le'Veon Bell has been on the trading block, it seems like, at least, and well, the question is, would the Ravens be better off with Le'Veon Bell or Mark Ingram? And this is something I posted on my Twitter 2 days ago. I mentioned it on the show yesterday. I think that the Ravens won that Mark Ingram deal, and I think that paying a premium for Le'Veon Bell and then taking on that salary, that's not for me. Mark Ingram's at $5 million a year. The Ravens got him at such a price that was so great, and his contribution to the Ravens on and off the field, it just can't be replicated. If Mark Ingram were to take a back seat or even be included in the package for Le'Veon Bell, I just don't see how that's a win. Le'Veon Bell is making a lot of money. He's making $13 million. And that's a hindrance for a lot of teams, and I would assume for Baltimore as well. Now, I've seen some takes on Twitter that have said the Ravens should go after him, should kind of not supplant Mark Ingram, but secure life after Mark Ingram. And I don't think that's where the Ravens should go. Tying up a lot of money into a running back who just turned 28. You know, the whole age for running backs is once you get to 30, that's like the death age. And Mark Ingram has turned 30. And, you know, right now I think Ingram at 30 is, in my opinion, better than Le'Veon Bell at 28. Now, that's a pretty hot take, I can admit it. And again, we'll never know what Le'Veon Bell could have done behind this Ravens offensive line. But at this point, I don't really want to. You know, I think Mark Ingram provides what the Ravens need. That's a workhorse running back who can still be, you know, supplanted and given rest by guys like Gus Edwards and Justice Hill. You don't have to overwork him. You don't have to ask too much of him. He's a bowling ball type of guy, bounces off defenders. The first thing that I noticed from Mark Ingram from his time in a Ravens uniform, works hard, never goes down. And I'm not knocking Le'Veon Bell. I'm not saying Le'Veon Bell is this guy who never works hard, never does anything, right? Le'Veon Bell, since going to the Jets, seems like he has improved a lot as a person. And that makes me really happy to see. But I think that when you look at Le'Veon Bell and just the scheme fit and just a personnel fit, I don't think it's the right decision for Baltimore, especially when you're considering, well, you're probably going to have to give up some draft capital to get him. He's not going to be a cap casualty. Paying $13 million for a running back, that's going to hinder the cap. It's going to hinder long-term ability to re-sign guys, hinder short-term ability to sign guys this offseason when you already have a need. So I'm just going to put these rumors to rest, and I'm going to say that Le'Veon Bell will not become a member of the Baltimore Ravens, and I think that's the way it should be. If Le'Veon Bell was meant to be a Raven, it would have happened in the offseason. Mark Ingram wouldn't have signed. Le'Veon Bell would have. There was a lot of rumors that Le'Veon Bell was using the Ravens as a leverage tool to push negotiations with the Jets and say, hey, the Ravens are offering me this amount of money. You have to step your game up. And I'll admit, I was one of the people who was pretty anxious about it, refreshing Twitter, saying, wow, like if we could really pull this off, we could really put Le'Veon Bell in a Ravens uniform, what would that do? But I am totally content, and I was totally content and totally happy with getting Mark Ingram and Earl Thomas, because realistically, if you sign Le'Veon Bell, you're not getting either of those guys. Obviously, you're not getting Ingram, but I don't think the Ravens offer that much money to Earl Thomas, And I don't think that really happens. I think it's the Le'Veon Bell show in Baltimore for the offseason. That's really all they get. I think they got great bargain with Ingram, an amazing contract with Earl Thomas that, yeah, it's a little expensive, but it's expiring right as Lamar Jackson's contract expires, so then they can use that money to re-sign Lamar Jackson. So I think the Ravens did a really great job here of making sure to make the money right for Mark Ingram, not overpay, and get two guys who they really wanted. And so I don't think Le'Veon Bell is coming to Baltimore anytime soon. Maybe late in his career, but at the moment, not at his current price, not at his current salary, and not when Mark Ingram, Gus Edwards, and Justice Hill are still running things in Baltimore. But here's the main guy I want to talk about. Stephon Diggs. The Vikings wide receiver has had a pretty big whirlwind of the last few days. He's deleted all things Vikings off of his social media, and it feels like he's kind of on the way out of Minnesota. And he's been tweeting a lot of cryptic things and saying all things are in God's hands, stuff of that matter. But it seems that the Vikings also don't want Diggs around. They want to move on from him. The Vikings are in relatively not in a great cap situation right now. They're looking to offload anybody they can, any of those high salary guys for draft picks. And Diggs is making a lot of money. And that's the number one reason I don't want Diggs in a Ravens uniform at this time. Now, there's no denying that Stephon Diggs is an extreme talent. He had 1,130 yards and 6 touchdowns on 63 receptions last year. He has 30 total touchdowns in 70 games, 365 receptions for 4,623 yards. There's no debating that Stephon Diggs would be exceptional in this Ravens offense, but there are two things that concern me with Stephon Diggs. Well, actually three. We'll start with the first one, which is the money. When you look at Stephon Diggs and his contract, he is signed through 2023. He has cap hits of $14.5 million, $15 million, $15 million, and $12 million over the 4 years that he would be in Baltimore. Now, that number actually goes down a bit because the bonuses are left to Minnesota, so it would go down to around $11 million, around $12 million, but even so, I think the Ravens would be much better off either drafting a receiver or two in this upcoming draft class, which is extremely, extremely deep, or signing an Emmanuel Sanders or an AJ Green to a anywhere from $7 to $10 million deal. Now, if the money gets a little outrageous and AJ Green's asking for $16 million and Sanders is asking for $14, then I'm probably out on those two guys also. My point being, I'm not tying up a ton of money in a receiver when I know that I have guys I need to resign, such as either Matthew Judon, Ronnie Stanley, Marlon Humphrey, Lamar Jackson. There are a lot of guys who the Ravens are going to have to re-sign in the coming years, and Stephon Diggs with that contract, it would hinder them a lot. Not to mention, the second reason I'm concerned is because the Ravens have to give up some pretty decent draft capital to get Stephon Diggs in a Ravens uniform. And, you know, the question I saw on Twitter was, well, who would you rather have? Stephon Diggs, but you have to give up your first round pick, or you have to give up your second round pick. Would you rather have AJ Green in a receiver you draft in the second round? And the answer every time is AJ Green in the receiver you draft in the second round. You can get AJ Green at less value, and yes, Stephon Diggs is a better receiver. But you then get a receiver in the draft who is young, who is under team control, who doesn't cost a lot against the cap. You're pretty much getting a 2-for-1 there, plus you're giving up a ton of draft capital. The ideal package for the Vikings would probably be to get a second round pick for Stephon Diggs, maybe even a fourth in there. I'm not giving that up just because of the fact that he's owed a lot of money and giving up that draft capital. Eric DaCosta made it public that being without a second round draft pick last season in the draft was absolutely terrible. He hated it. It was awful. I don't think they're making that mistake again. Mistake again. So I think that with DaCosta, he's not necessarily worried about giving up that draft capital. He wants to maximize that draft capital. And yeah, sure, this can become a different conversation if the Ravens maybe tag and trade Matt Judon for a second and a fifth. But then you're asking, okay, well, we're going to tie up the money in a receiver. We're not going to have enough money to sign a pass rusher or an inside linebacker or an interior defensive lineman. It all just kind of jumbles on top of each other and gets into a chain reaction type deal where you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, we have Hollywood Brown on a cheap contract. Yeah, we can probably afford a star receiver opposite of him, but are we going to give up the draft capital to do so? And I don't think the Ravens are going to. And then finally, you have to look at the scheme fit. Stephon Diggs is a guy who wants the football, and I think every receiver should want the football. Their job is to catch the football and to score touchdowns. Now, they also have a lot of other responsibilities, of course. Don't get me wrong. They have to block. They have to do a lot of other stuff. But Stephon Diggs has thrown a few tantrums a few times, for lack of a better term, about not getting the football and being frustrated with lack of offense. And with the Ravens, you can never be frustrated with lack of offense, at least not anymore when you got number 8 behind center. But in this Ravens offense, receivers don't get targeted often. In fact, they don't get targeted a lot. It's really a tight end, running back, fullback centric offense. And yeah, Hollywood Brown helps this offense tremendously. His speed, his ability to drag safeties with him over the top that opens up the middle of the field. There's a lot that Hollywood Brown does, and don't get me wrong, he still caught his fair share of footballs. But I think what Stephon Diggs is looking for is an offense that features him. And I don't think the Ravens are going to feature him. It's going to be more of, hey, look, we're going to put you in the offense, but you're not necessarily going to get 10 targets a game. You might get 2, you might get 4. I don't know if that's okay with Stephon Diggs. Now, if he's winning, that could be a different story. But at the moment, you know, he seems to me a guy who, amazing production, amazing talent, but just costing too much money, too much draft capital, and the scheme fit might not be there. So my personal opinion, I'm going to squash those rumors now too and say I do not believe Stephon Diggs is going to come to Baltimore. But I don't know. I've been wrong before, but I don't think I'm wrong here. So, I mean, if Stephon Diggs comes to Baltimore, I'll embrace it. I'll be happy, but I just don't think that it'll be worth the money, the draft capital, or the scheme fit that it might present. We're going to go to our final break now. When we get back, we're going to be talking about some defensive trade candidates for Baltimore, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of this Locked on Ravens episode. Kevin Ostreicher is still with you, and we just talked about the offensive trade candidates for Baltimore in the 2019 offseason, but now let's get into the defensive trade candidates for Baltimore. And there are only two here for me. And the first one I don't think makes a lot of sense. The second one could, but I think the money's a little too big. And there could be another way to get him next year. So let's start and let's talk about Darius Slay, the cornerback, the all-pro cornerback from the Detroit Lions. He is unhappy. He's looking for a new deal. And he's going to cost a lot of draft capital, and plus he's a cornerback. And I've seen stuff on Twitter that said, well, dang, imagine a secondary with Darius Slay, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, Jimmy Smith, Tavon Young, Earl Thomas, Chuck Clark. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And if the Ravens were to trade for Darius Slay, they would have to give up a lot. They'd have to give up at least a first-round pick. And the Ravens are set at cornerback, and this is a position I love gushing about, so I guess this just gave me another excuse to do so. With Tavon Young coming back, Marlon Humphrey moves back to the outside. The Ravens have two shutdown cornerbacks in Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey on the outside. Tavon Young is considered one of the best slot cornerbacks in the NFL. And his job is covering guys like Julian Edelman, Jarvis Landry's, you know, if you want to go to a Ravens guy who was a slot receiver, Michael Campanaro, right? Guys like that. That's a tough job, and Marlon Humphrey showed that he can adjust and he can do it pretty well, but Marlon Humphrey's an absolute beast, another animal on the outside. Darius Slay would be taking away one of those outside positions, and if you say, hey, well, why don't we just put Tavon Young in the package? That would require probably moving Marlon Humphrey back inside of the slot where he's not nearly as good as he is on the outside. Now, Darius Slay, there's no debating his eliteness as a cornerback. He's a guy who doesn't give up a lot of completions. He had 8 interceptions in 2017. That was his career high. He's had at least 2 interceptions in every year except his rookie year in 2013. So he's a guy who's seen a few things, had a few interceptions, but I just don't think this, frankly, makes sense for Baltimore. You look at the team and the strength is arguably and obviously, aside from the tight ends and the running backs, at the cornerback position, in the secondary in general. You're not going to move him to safety. You just signed Chuck Clark. You have Earl Thomas. There's not a need here for the Ravens. And so let's just kill all these rumors now and say Darius Slay, regardless of how good he is, how awesome he'd look in a Ravens uniform, how awesome he'd perform in a Ravens uniform, I do not think in the slightest that he is coming to Baltimore. It costs too much draft capital. His contract would be big. Again, it would hinder the Ravens' ability to not only re-sign players this offseason, but also make sure that they wouldn't have as much money to sign other key contributors to deals this offseason as well. So I don't think Darius Slay is coming to Baltimore. The only other guy I can think of at the top of my head right now is Von Miller from the Denver Broncos, a guy who's had a ton of production. Don't get me wrong. 14.5 sacks in 2018, had another 8 in 2019, 106 career sacks in his time with the Denver Broncos. But this is solely because of money. And plus, you know, he's a guy who is absolutely going to put up numbers, so it could cost a bit of draft capital as well. But Von Miller, his cap hit this season is $25.625 million. That is way too much money. That's eating up almost all but $6 to $9 million of the Ravens cap space. That's not going to fly for, you know, a premier pass rusher, but he's 31 years old. He's going to be 32 next year. I think this is a scenario where the Ravens could actually get him next year, and let me tell you why. Von Miller, his cap hit next year is $22.25 million, but his dead money is only $4.225. So the Broncos, if they feel like he had a down year, or if they feel like he's getting a little too up there in age to pay $22 million, the Broncos could cut him, and so the Ravens might play it for the extra year and say, we're not going to give up a ton of draft capital, we're not going to hinder our cap space, we're going to go after him next offseason. Now, of course, there's no guarantee that Von Miller gets cut by Denver. He could have a great, outstanding year, and they say, hey, we're going to pay you this $22 million. But trading for him right now, especially in the strong pass rushing market that there are some good pass rushers in the draft, the Ravens could re-sign Matthew Judon. I don't think giving up draft capital necessarily is the right move for trading for Von Miller. Plus, I mean, the cap hit itself, it just speaks for itself. I don't personally think the Ravens are going to go after a trade. Maybe if they do, they would trade, you know, a fifth or a sixth for a guy who, you know, hopefully a Marcus Peters, right? But I think a fifth or a sixth for a mid-level guy. I don't think they're going to trade for any stars. They're not going to go after anybody insane. But I think, you know, you look at Von Miller and Darius Slay on the defense, you think that's a lot of money. Darius Slay doesn't even feel a need. Von Miller's making way too much money. It has to be just a balance of, okay, we're going to go after these guys, but they have to make sense from a schematical standpoint, financial standpoint, and asset standpoint. And out of all the guys I discussed, there's not one of them that does. Stephon Diggs is the closest you get because he's a receiver and he could really do some damage in the Ravens' offense. Von Miller is the second guy, but Le'Veon Bell, Darius Slay, they don't provide a need, right? I mentioned them because I've seen rumors on Twitter saying, hey, what if we got this guy? I don't think there's any possibility that the Ravens do get those guys, and I mean, if they do, it frankly wouldn't be that great of a move. So Eric DaCosta, we trust, he did a great job, an outstanding job in the offseason last year. I expect nothing more than his best work this offseason as he tries to get this roster, and I believe he will get this roster, to its peak championship form coming out of the offseason. That's all I have for you today. Tomorrow when we get back, we'll be talking even more Ravens football as we do here on Locked On Ravens every day, so stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.